off the beat, south to south, the beat north, where I'm from, Virginia, of course, south to beat north, north to beat south, what it's like, hey yo, it is what it is, yeah, hey yo, it is what it is, hey yo, it is what it is, it could be nothing else.
Is this Jerry?
Yeah, what's going on, bro?
Hey man, how you doing? It's Sandy Kyler.
Yeah, I got your number saved, man. I'm good, man. Just finally relaxing, kicking back, painting all day, man. You know, trying to make that little side money.
Yeah, well, sorry to catch you right after work and maybe tax your mind, making you go back all these years.
Oh, that's all right, man. I'm ready to do it, man. It's been a while.
All right, then. So let me ask you some stuff because, you know, I don't think we've even been formally introduced or anything at any point. Are you originally from Reston? Are you an old school Reston guy?
No, I'm not originally from Reston, but I moved here when I was 14 from Seattle and, you know, started going to South Lakes and pretty much, you know, first thing I did was find a guitar player, you know, because I had to leave a band out in Seattle that I had originally started with a couple of friends, and my parents moved, and I had to go with them. So I got out here and went to Guitar Lab at South Lakes and met Justin Corbett, you know, and started playing with him a lot. And from then, it just kind of grew, you know. I became, you know, a resting head, you know, pretty much hanging out with hanging out with all the different cliques, though. It was kind of funny because, you know, there were the jocks, there were the brothers, you know, played the go-go in the hallways and stuff. And then there was, like, the hippie kids and then the punk rock kids and the metal kids. And I hung out with all of them. You know, my girlfriend was, like, a preppy girl, you know. So I got to know a lot of people real quick, a lot of different kinds of people, you know. So I pretty much know everybody in wrestling, you know. I've been here since it was like 84, 85. You know, that's
wow.
What here.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and I've never left, really. I've never left. You know, I've been here ever since. You know, the music is good here. So.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things about Reston. Was always the music. Although, what was like the cultural differences coming from Seattle at that time?
Oh,
Northern Virginia.
Yeah, it was very different. You know, I remember coming here and I have I used to wear these red like parachute pants that were like I had them zipped down to look metal, and I would wear like my red long sleeve Judas Priest shirt, and my hair was long, and you know, going through the thumb schools, man, people would trip out on me because it was like I said, it was like jocks and preppies and, you know, the brothers and stuff, and there was real no metalheads. There was some metalheads, but they were, like, hanging out with the hippies, you know. So it was, people were tripping on me because I was very open about who I was, you know what I mean? Yeah, I play music, man, you know. So it was real fun, you know, coming out here from Seattle and meeting different people, you know, because it's like one culture out there in Seattle, you know. Same type of people everywhere. Everybody's really friendly, really down to earth, and you know, they care about each other. But, you know, I had to get out of there. You know, after I went back years later, I was thinking about staying there, and I was like, I just can't be here. There's too many drugs around here, man. It changed a lot.
You know, what were you listening to? What kind of music was moving you at that time?
Was Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, you know, any kind of metal like that, Dio, Black Sabbath. You know, especially Sabbath, you know, that's where I really figured out that I wanted to play bass, you know, so this was a lot of Sabbath and, you know, I don't know, trying to get over the old Kiss stuff, you know what I mean, from the 70s when I was younger, I was listening to Kiss, you know, and there was really nothing else that was like it, so, you know, when all these other bands like Maiden and stuff started coming out, you know, that really, really turned me on to metal, you know, so.
Pain and misery.
George and stuff, you know, and the Thompson twins. When I got here, and, you know, I'd be riding around with my older brother, like, cranking Priest and stuff, you know. So, you know, it was cool. I found the people who loved it, though, you know.
Yeah. Was bass your first instrument?
Actually, no. My first instrument was a bass clef instrument. It was a saxophone in, like, third grade, man. You know, I started played that for about 6 months, and then I don't know what happened. You know, it's hard to remember why I stopped playing. But, yeah, I eventually, you know, the only other instrument I really played besides bass was guitar originally, because I had an acoustic guitar that had four strings. So I would learn, like, I would learn the bar chords and then learn the bass line and, you know, just learn songs like that, you know. And then, you know, one day my friend was like, hey, man, you know, he came over to spend the night, and I was like, check this out, I learned this song. And he was like, well, did you know I'm a drummer, you know? His name was Mike Schuyler, and this is about, I think we were in, like, seventh grade. He was like, you know, I'm a drummer, man, I got a practice place at my house, you know? And I was like, really? He's like, come over. And his parents rented me a amp, or what was it, an acoustic bass amp, a full stack, and one of them old Gibson Gene Simmons basses. And I was in La La Land. I had never played a real bass before, you know, and I could play all those songs that I learned the bass lines on this bass. So I was, like, freaked out. It's been the bass ever since, you know.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's really supportive of Mike Schuyler's parents.
Yeah, she was great. Patty Schuyler would we had a band for, like, maybe a year and a half. Yeah, we did a couple of shows. We did, like, five or six shows at that age, you know, and she made us outfits, you know. She actually got us in a parade, and we were riding on the back of a flatbed trailer with a generator inside the van, and she had to put up with all the fumes, and it powered all our gear. We drove through town in Port Orchard, Washington, drove through town in a parade playing Free For All by Ted Nugent and Breaking the Law and a couple other tunes, you know. It was pretty fun, man, you know.
Never before have I turned on you when you look too good to me. Your beady eyes that could cut me in two, and I just can't let you be. But it's a free-for-all, and a height I said, you can bet your life. Stakes are high, and so am I. It's in the air tonight. It's a fever all.
That must have been a hell of a thing for a 14-year-old to experience, or 15-year-old.
It was amazing because all my school friends were following our float. You know, they followed us all the way through town. You know, and we ended up getting, like, third place in the parade, and that which got us another show on the post office dock on the 4th of July. You know, and then we got another show at the high school. You know, so it was pretty cool, you know, for a bunch of kids who really, we probably really sucked, you know, but it was a great time, and I'll never forget that.
It must have given you a lot of confidence when you went all the way across the United States and you're trying to make new friends and, you know, and you're meeting new people and saying, like, hey, you know, I play bass or whatever, but, like, you were in a band that had already played shows and everything at that age.
Yeah.
So in meeting people, you're like, I'm actually for real with this.
Right. Well, I had actually, like I said, I went to Guitar Lab at South Lakes, and I met this cat named Justin Corbett, you know, and he was telling me how good he could play, you know, and everybody in the class could play, you know. But he was being extra special about it, and I had no idea, you know. So me and my brother showed up at his house one day, and he was like, what do you want me to play? And I was like, I'm trying to be a smartass. I was like, Eruption. And he blew it out, man. He played that shit. And I was like, okay, this is a guy I got to stick with, you know. Have jammed off and on for years, you know. I haven't seen him in a few years, but once in a while we'll get together, you know. We did this band called Abraxas, you know, at that time. And then we did another band called Red Starfish years later with Brian Stewart, you know. And that was a great band, you know. We recorded a demo tape, you know. It was probably, I think it was like 6 or 7 songs, you know. They were really good songs, you know, that me and Justin wrote with Brian. But, Yeah, you know, everybody in the ninth grade knew I was going to be doing music, you know. So that's how I try to portray myself. It's like, I want to be in a band. That's all I want to do. I don't care about school, you know. And it worked out, you know. It's worked out pretty good.
Well, so how did that evolve into the band that you formed? The two of you guys.
So me and Justin? Well, you know, we just sat around and just would, actually, Guitar Lab, we got credit for writing or doing projects on Fridays, you know, like having something to play, and then we would get credit for it. So me and him would spend all week together writing riffs, you know, just jamming out and trying to make up something for Friday so we'd get an A, you know, and it ended up being, like, good songs, you know. We were like, well, you know, we got to get this drummer, and we got Andy Gems from Rustin to play, and he was a sick drummer, just like Justin was a guitar player at that time, you know, at that age, you know. He was one of the best drummers I'd ever heard, you know, live. And his friend came and sang, and it just evolved from there, you know. And then once, you know, a few years went by doing it, and, you know, how things fall apart, you know, and it's not exciting. And I ended up doing some road work for a band from Baltimore called Blitzkrieg. I was doing some guitar teching, and it just so happens they were playing with Wrathchild America, who was from Baltimore, Hagerstown, and Wrathchild was touring a lot then, so they had actually asked them to open up. James Turner Productions gave them a lot of shows, and so I had a gig, you know, working for them, and their bass player ended up just quitting, you know, that he couldn't do these shows that we were getting, and they just looked at me, and they were like, you ready? And I was like, what do I have to do? And they said 53 songs in about 3 days, cover tunes, you know. And I was like, I know all the songs because I've been working for you for like a year and a half, you know. So let me go home and try, but I'll see you at practice on Thursday before we leave. And I went up there and played one set out of 4. And they were like, if you could play the rest of the sets like that, you're golden. We took off. Played with them for a while, you know, did a bunch of shows and stuff, and then things kind of fell apart after that, like, for me, like, musically, because, you know, my parents were moving around here a lot, you know, lost a girlfriend, and I just kind of put it on hold for a little while, and...
How old were you when you were gigging with them?
About 17. Yeah, I left high school to go do this tour, you know, with them. It was basically... gigs from James Turner Productions, you know, 2 nights here, 3 nights here, a week up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, you know, 4 nights in the same place. And then, you know, we'd pick up gigs with Wrathchild. They'd be playing every night, so we'd be playing every night, opening up for them, you know, doing an hour set, cutting their 4-hour set into 3 hours for them, you know. It helped them out a lot, you know. But, yeah.
What did your parents say?
You know, my father was military. He was really looking forward to me going to, like, you know, the Air Force Academy. He had an appointment for me at Boys Town in Florida. You know, he had, like, a schedule of, like, I had, a gig there going, you know, to the Air Force. but I chose music instead. So he was pretty sour about it, you know. But he supported me a lot once he realized I was good at what I was doing, you know. And my mother has been nothing but, well, was full support all her life with me until the day she passed. You know, she was, hey, I'll take care of the bills at home. You just go and do it, even if you're not making any money. You just might not be able to do this again tomorrow, you know. And she was full 100% supportive, you know.
That's beautiful. Did either of them have any music in the family?
Oh, yeah. My mother was a concert pianist, you know, and she had a chance to go to Juilliard when she was about 14 or 15. And I'm not sure exactly what happened. If something happened with her mother that she couldn't go, you know. So she was devastated about it, you know. And so every chance I had to do music, she was right there behind me, you know, pushing me to do it, you know.
So she kind of gave you the support that she was never able to have, and kind of helped you to have the dream that she wanted to.
Yeah, that's exactly. You know, she wanted me to. She knew that's what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be, and whatever she could do to support me doing it was always right there, man. No, never a negative thing about it. You know, as far as like buying me gear to play with, you know, guitars and stuff, she was right there. You know.
Did she play music in the house? Did she play piano?
Oh yeah, she played piano daily. You know, she would play just read chart music and stuff. Never anything like real incredibly fancy or anything, but she would read, like, you know, she would play Bach from the charts just for maybe a half hour every other day or something until, you know, she couldn't move her piano anymore. She was just like, I can't play anymore. You know, she had arthritis and stuff, so she stopped playing, you know. But it was great, you know. As a child, I remember hearing her play all the time, you know. Even those little Casio keyboards, she would take one in the living room every once in a while and just mess around with it.
And you said your brother played too?
My brother is a professional all-tech. He works for multiple bands. He's a world traveler. I'm sure you've heard of pretty much most of the bands he's ever worked for, you know, Kesha, the Jacksons. Who else? Victor Wooten, you know, A Day to Remember, who else? Just all those newer bands, too. You know, he's actually about to go on the road with Los Lonely Boys here in, I think, this week. He's actually going out doing some West Coast dates with them. But he's an all-tech. He does bass, drums, guitar, keyboards for one, you know, job, if that's what it requires, you know.
So he's got those ears.
Yeah, he knows how to take care of the stuff, you know, and you know, I owe all that to that band. That's one of the first bands that I toured with, that band of toured with Rothschild. We were teching for them, so we learned all that stuff at that time. So he kept going with that, and I went more the musical route playing, and he's turned into just a worldwide, you know, tech. So pretty proud of him, man, you know.
Yeah. Did he play too?
Yeah, he plays bass, he plays guitar, you know, he's pretty good at it, you know, he writes songs and sends them to me here and there, you know, but he loves to go up there and set up the stuff and play them loud, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Fun guy.
Did you guys jam together?
Yeah, we jammed a lot together, you know. When we were younger, I had a drum set, a bass amp, and a guitar at the house. At my parents' house, and we would jam out in the basement every once in a while. I never really was allowed to jam when my dad was around. You know, he didn't like it. But when we could, we'd get a couple friends over and just go nuts, you know, play whatever we could try to figure out.
Did he introduce you? He was an older brother, right?
Yeah. He introduced me to the guitar. This is a funny story because my mother went out and bought him Gibson SG. And an acoustic amp, the same type of amp I first used. And he had this bedroom, and I was not allowed to touch it. But when he was gone, I would go in there and mess around with it. And and one day I broke the string, and there was none in there to replace it with. And, I got busted on that one.
Did you guys have similar taste in music? Was he also into metal?
Yeah, yeah, we both love the same stuff. You know, he liked more new age music than I did. I like more metal stuff, but we liked all the same metal music, you know, that I like. He loved it, you know. He may have got sick of it because I was playing it sometimes too much, but he, yeah, me and him have the same musical taste, you know.
What were the shows that you saw when you got to D.C. that kind of, you know, opened you up to the live music around in the area?
Well, when I was in Seattle, my brother and his friend, they were listening to, like, punk rock stuff, and I was listening to more Iron Maiden, and they showed me this tape of the Bad Brains. Well, it was actually Let 'Em Eat Jelly Beans. It was a compilation tape of a lot of U.S., hardcore bands at that time, and he showed me the Bad Brains, and I loved it, you know. And I was like, man, who are these? My brother was like, they're from D.C., and I was like, oh, man, they're great, you know. And then we ended up moving here, and that's one of the first shows me and him went to together was the Bad Brains, and we had seen nothing like it, man. You know, it was, and first off, I didn't know they were all Rastafarians, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't know they were brothers, and I went to the show and I was just like, this isn't the band. My brother was like, this is the band. And I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, these dudes are insane, man. And I'd never seen a mosh pit, you know. Out in Seattle, it was more like you stood and watched the shows, you know. And I wasn't into punk rock scene. So at that point, me and my brother were like, this is the scene to be in, you know. And we started, like, trying to check out shows, the bands that we had heard off that Let 'Em Eat Jelly Beans. If they ever came around, we would go. And, you know, we made some friends and, you know, continued on from that for years, you know. I ended up playing with a lot of D.C. bands or a lot of D.C. people, you know, that were in that scene over the years, you know.
What were some of those bands?
I actually ended up playing with a friend, Grant Garrickson, and he had me come and play with this band called Chucky Sluggo, which Dave Byers from the HR band, the singer for the Bad Brains, his solo band, Dave was actually a writer and one of the main, you know, he was the lead guitarist on a lot of his albums. And so my friend Grant had asked me to come play in his band with Dave, Chucky Sluggo. And, you know, we did some recordings and, you know, played a lot of shows together. And it was like an eye-opening experience for me because Dave was a Berklee graduate, you know, guitar player. So he taught me a lot of stuff about me and playing bass, you know. I kind of went a weird different direction listening to stuff like Jocko and jazz stuff, you know, and trying to figure out what to play on the bass that wasn't the guitar, you know, like writing that stuff. He showed me how to do all that, you know.
What would you say that is? Like, what's the difference?
A lot of bass players just, you know, take the simple route, you know, try to follow the guitars, do a little here and there. But what he was trying to show me was that, you know, you're your own person, man. You know, you can write this and have them write around you, you know. And it's not always the bass player that has to stand in the back. You know, he said most of his his songs are bass orientated, you know, and as I listened to him, got to know him, that was, it was true, you know, a lot of the stuff that he wrote, the bass came first, you know, that was the main groove, so, you know, I took it from there with him, and you know, we did a lot of cool stuff together, man, you know. It's a shame he passed away in, I think it was 2002. Yeah, he wasn't doing too good. Said he didn't feel good one day and then was gone, you know. So
it's a rough lifestyle sometimes.
Yeah, and he's been doing a, I mean, you know, I knew him then. He was sober, from what I understand, and he was doing his thing and playing guitar. He's just given me his new recordings he had done, like made a special trip out to Vienna to the metro, and I drove over there and I thought he was coming with me. He just ran up to my car and handed me a CD and was like, "It's my new stuff, man. I got to get back on the train." And he left. And you know, it was a great recording. You know, he did a bunch of new idea stuff, you know, and just like different from what we've been writing. And yeah, he I never really got to speak to him again, so I hold that CD with me all the time, you know, it's in my case in my other room, and it just sits there, you know. Inspiration.
Yeah, yeah. Lost a lot of good musicians along the way.
Oh yeah, a few. It's only going to become more. But you know what? The time that I've spent with these ones that aren't around anymore is non-replaceable. You know, it means a lot to me, and I remember a lot of these people, like Andy, you know, from LDK. You know, I think about him every day. You know. That was our big band back in Reston, you know, in the day for the Jam for Man, you know.
Well, so you brought it up. So tell me about it. Tell me about that Reston scene and tell me about how LDK came together.
Oh, well, you know, like I said, I had been playing with that band for Baltimore, and with the band I teched for and ended up being in. And when that was all over, I ended up going to Hunter's Cliff gas station one day, and there's little Andy Wells, you know, grinding the curb on his skateboard. And he was like, "You're Jerry, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "You play bass, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, man." He goes, "We need a bass player, man, for LDK." And I was like, "Well, you know, I've heard of you guys. My brother had actually went to a party a couple weeks before and told me there was a great band playing, LD Kids, you know." And I was like, "Oh, man, I should have went." And it turns out I was talking to the singer, you know. So, yeah, he asked me to come. And I tried out, and they loved it. And we ended up doing, they had already had a demo out, you know, with their old bass player. And, you know, I went and did the second demo with them, and then we did the third recordings with them. And we went to Inner Ear for that. It was great. Kids was the name of it. But, yeah, we did a lot of shows and, you know, had a lot of fun as teenagers, you know, at that edge of being, like, 19 to 20. You know, we had a lot of fun, you know, playing just the shows with the Cro-Mags and multiple bands. We had our own stuff going on at the Bayou. We would do it once a month, you know, at the Bayou in Georgetown. So for punk rock band, man, it was pretty good. You know, we started getting really, really out there, you know, playing out a lot.
What was the lineup when you joined?
The lineup was Andy Wells, Mike Munoz and Craig Harmison, and Tim Berry was on drums, and Chris Mosky was the bass player that you know, had left. So I guess when I came, there was a miscommunication about who was going to, that I was even coming, and Tim Berry, I guess, left the band. It happened, like, I wasn't even there. I came to practice, and there was no drummer, you know. So, and I knew Tim from a few years before school and stuff. And I was like, "Oh, well, did he quit?" And they were like, "I think so." And I was, they had a show coming up, you know. And I was like, "Well, I know this incredible drummer named Rob Coogan, Brennigan, you know, his last name's Brennigan, but we call him Coogan. He's from Wheaton, Maryland. And he was in a band called Indestroy, and I was really good friends with him at the time. And he was like, "I'll do it." So I brought him down. So the first show I ever played with LDK was Andy Wells, Craig Harmison, Mike Munoz, myself, and Rob Coogan. And we played a Tara. Tara, we used to hang out with a lot. Played at her parents' house in a garage, and there was like, I don't know, 150 people hanging out of her garage in a circle pit. You know, it's pretty cool. It was awesome.
Yeah. What was Craig on?
Craig was on lead guitar. He did most of the writing. You know, he would come up with a lot of great riffs and Munoz. You know, they grew up playing together from when they were kids, so they were really tight at writing, you know. So I would just throw my flavor over it, like I said, try to play different than them, you know. And we came up with some great tunes, you know, the stuff I did write with them. Because most of the stuff we played, they had written before I joined the band. But there was a few, I think like 5 songs that we all wrote together for a few years. We played those, you know, and their songs, you know. So it was fun. I felt like, you know, I mixed in really well with them, you know, for what they were trying to do.
Concentrate
maybe for an hour and a half on a riff either that Craig had. He would play something and Munoz would basically throw some flavor over it of his own. You know, Munoz has that not rockabilly, but surf style, you know, surf punk style. And he's really good with harmonies and stuff. So they would do a lot of harmony work together, harmony chords, you know, and it just sounded beautiful. So I had to, like, try to bring it up a notch and do something in the middle of all that, you know. And it took a lot of time, you know. And it's good because the drummer would be able to sit there and just beat on the drums and write something without even talking to us, because we'd be playing these riffs over and over. So, you know, they eventually would come together, you know. And like I said, everything we did, I think everybody in Reston loves it, you know, that was in the scene, you know.
What,
one of the classics.
Would Andy be sitting there writing lyrics while you guys were doing that, or did he just kind of make them up off the top of his head, or how did he work?
I think he did it from all around. I know he had lyrics always written, and he would always be working on something, you know. And I think he would listen to the riff and then feel something and just go for it, you know. And it 99% of the time it was perfect, you know. It was at least as far as what I was, you know, part of writing. He was on it most of the time. It felt like he had already knew what he was going to sing to it before he even heard it, you know. So, like, patterns.
So that demo, those first, like, bunch of songs that you guys did together, that was second try?
Yeah, well, they had actually written all those songs before I joined the band, but I ended up doing the recording with them. And it's funny, we did the recording in my bedroom in the basement of my parents' house, and my mom sat right outside the back door and listened to us all day while we recorded it. It was fun. It was a great time, and we actually did that on just a little 4-track, you know. And I'd like to be able to get it, remaster it, but I think the master 4-track's gone, so, you know, we could probably do something with it and clean it up. But, you know, I still see people listening to it sometimes, you know.
Yeah, I've got a beat up version of it on tape.
Right. Those are the ones we used to mass produce in my basement. And
I got one side has LDK on it and the other side has Doubt on it.
Oh, nice. Nice. I think maybe Brian Stewart might have made that or some or somebody made that, but yeah, that's great, man. I loved when we'd all do a show together and all the bands in Reston would have like a bunch of cassettes, you know, everybody'd be working on it for a few weeks. And then we go to the show, we'd all sell each other cassettes.
So was it your four track? You were the one that had the four track?
No, it was Alan Deal, right? Spooky Ruben.
Yeah.
From Transillions. Yeah, it was him. He came, I think it was one of the first times he did some recording stuff, but he came over and did all the recording for us in my basement. It was pretty fun. You know, he's a great guy, man. I haven't seen him. I talked to him on Facebook, but I haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah, he's in Japan right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I follow him on Facebook. You know, I knew he was doing some stuff, but it's great to see him on there, man. Still doing his thing, you know?
He is. He's touring around Japan. He's actually my neighbor. We live like three blocks from one another out in L.A.
Are you serious? That's great, man.
Yeah, it's awesome. And he has a monthly, like, show that he does over at Cantor's. Which is, it's a bar that, like, Guns N' Roses started at.
Right.
And, so he plays this, like, monthly brunch set on Sundays.
That is classic. That's something he would do, you know?
Yeah.
He was always very inventive and, like, creative, you know?
But he definitely understands recording. You know, if there's one thing that he knows about, it's how to get the sound right and the sound that he wants and kind of hears in his head. So
he always knew exactly what he was aiming for. You know, like when he was looking for a bass player for Transillions at a moment. And he was like, do you understand the stuff? Like, because I was like, I'll do it. You know, and he looked at me seriously. He's like, do you understand it? And I was like, he kind of scared me, you know. I don't know. Maybe I don't understand it, but I love it, man. And I'll learn it, you know. But nothing ever happened to that. But it was funny.
Because you didn't say like Andy Johnson, like, yeah, I do. I understand it better than you do.
I'm not a reader, and when it comes to that technical stuff, like this weird timing signatures, man, I have to really concentrate on it. I just can't do it. You know, it's one of those fun things that you have to learn how to do if you really want to play some good stuff. You know.
I don't think Andy Johnson knew what the hell he was doing when he started either, but he just had that confidence of just saying, like, I know exactly what I'm doing.
When I saw him play that stuff for the first time, I mean, I knew him, but I never really saw him play bass. I think I saw him in school with, like, a cello. when I first saw him play the Transylvania stuff, I think we ended up going to Spooky's for a practice or something. And I was blown away. I was like, this kid is going to be sick, you know. He's going to be one of the good ones, you know. And I actually talked to him a few years ago. I played a show and I got stranded in New York and I missed my bus. But my friend was like, come over and spend the night. And I posted on Facebook. I was like, anyone got a couch? You know? And Andy Johnson was one of the first people that was like, Jerry, I live here in New York. And if you want to come, you can stay here as long as you need to, you know. And I had already told a friend that I was going to come to his house, you know, and wait for the mega bus to get back to town. And so I had to cancel on Andy, but it was really nice to hear from him. You know, we talked for a little bit after that, like, you know, just texting each other and stuff. But yeah, he's a great day.
Rest in roots run deep.
They go really deep, man. I'm proud to say I've been a part of this cool scene here, man, you know. And, you know, it's still, you know, me and Nathan, you know, Nathan Turney, we have a band right now called Pitbull 1999. And, we've been doing this for 20 years, you know, since 99. So every time I leave with a band like Corrosion Conformity Blind or HR or just anybody else, I always have that to come back, and it's always been here for me, man. You know, we're still pumping, man. We just lost our drummer, and
we're trying to get our old drummer to come back. Practices have been hard to schedule. So, you know, we're really excited about getting back with the original guy and trying to write some new songs because we've been playing these songs for years. You know, we have like 20 songs that we've been playing for 20 years, you know, so...
Hear you still making music and still out there playing with a band.
Yeah, it's been fun, man. And, I would never trade it in for anything, you know. My new wife, I recently got married a couple years back, and it was on a Motorhead cruise, so it was awesome. But she's been just as supportive as my mother always was, you know. She's behind me 100%. If there's any chance for me to go do something, she's pushing me out the door, you know.
Congratulations. So,
Thanks. Yeah.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah, you got to have some support, man. If you don't have support from your family and friends, you know, it's hard to do, you know. And I've been very fortunate to have everybody be behind me 100%. You know, most of my friends, you know, even the ones I don't get along with, I know they love me, and I love them too. You know, it's everyone's been behind me. You know, and it's a blessing. You know.
So tell me, the name of the show is Jams for Man. So, what are your memories of playing Jam for Man?
Wow, the circle pit, man, was sort of the donut. Like, I don't know, there was a few hundred people there, just big donut, and all our homies up front jamming, slamming, you know, rocking out to our set. You know, it was amazing. The other bands in front of us, you know. Enjoying it just as much as we enjoyed them, you know. It was a great time. And then for what it was, you know, I thought it was, you know, I don't think I looked at it like I do now when I was a kid about, you know, the donations and the food and all that. And, you know, it was really, really a great thing that they did, you know, to put that together and to benefit, you know, the homeless and stuff, you know. It was something I probably would have never thought of at that time in my life, you know, to try to do, but... You know, Wrestling Interface and Mikey Worsley's mom, you know, they did a great job on those, you know. And it was great that all the bands got to play something like that, you know.
Yeah. What do you, what, what are your memories from of Andy's performance there?
Oh, he was insane. You know, like I said, every time he sang, you know, a show, all the energy you could feel just coming off of him, it was just, it made you want to have that much energy and make him, you know, feel it behind you, behind him, you know. So his performances there were always phenomenal, you know. A lot of good stage presence, man. I miss it, you know.
People always say that there was something really magnetic about his performance and his personality.
Yeah, he lived with me for a while, you know, and at my parents' house. You know, he lived with me for maybe a good 6 to 8 months. And he was so different, like just this little guy who just was happy all the time, you know, and wanted to make you happy and wanted to have just a good time, you know. And then when he got on stage, man, he was like a madman, you know. He was angry, you know. he could make the crowd, like, just watch him, you know, and be like, wow, I'm understanding what he's talking about, you know. I mean, I did it from standing next to him on stage, and I could feel his energy, you know. And he was just such a magical person, like he was saying, man. Like, you know, there's no one I've ever met like him, you know.
Just to change subject for a second, because you had mentioned that you guys recorded and you've recorded professionally at Inner Ear Studios. I have a bit of a fascination with Inner Ear. And amazingly, like virtually all the bands that I talked to that recorded, you know, some sort of professional demo, they either recorded at Stillness out in Warrenton, or they recorded at Inner Ear Studios. And you having heard of, you know, like Bad Brains kind of first, and them having recorded at Inner Ear, what was that experience like for you?
It was actually pretty whack that we were recording with Don Zantara, you know, who did all the like Dag Nasty stuff and some of my other bands, and you know, it was our first real like time, just us. There was no, it was my brother, Mike, Craig, and me. No, actually, my brother wasn't in that one. He was supposed to be, but it was just great going in there because I had never really done a full on recording with a professional engineer who had a name, you know. So he was telling us what to do, and we were doing it, and it was pretty fun, you know.
On the show, I would love to talk to him.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I haven't had. I didn't even know if the place was still going. I know some people said they had recorded there, but I don't know if it's the same place we went. It might have moved or something. But I can see what I can find out. You know, I know Skeeter from Scream and all those guys, so you know they might have some contact info for that guy.
Oh yeah. Studio. That would be super exciting. There, you know, I went on the website, and it sure seems like it's fully operational and fully go. I don't know if it's the same exact location that you guys recorded in. One of the cool things on the website is they list every single band that ever recorded with them.
Oh, wow. I wonder if we're on.
Yeah. So you guys are on there.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so that's great. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's really cool to look down this list of bands. And it's like a who's who of just D.C., Northern Virginia, you know, DMV area bands that ever were. And then other bands that just wanted that sound, that wanted that Discord sound.
Right. Yeah, the Discord thing was great, man. I mean, I wasn't a part of it. You know, I've met a lot of those guys that, you know, at my older age, you know, I've become friends with them since I've toured and done, you know, an album with HR. You know, they're really cool people, man, you know. Discord, man, you know, it's amazing. They're still going, you know, it's crazy. You know, these labels and studios that are still around, like Hugh Studios, you know, that's my favorite studio in Northern Virginia. I'll always go there. Very expensive, but it's worth it, you know. And I've had a lot of opportunities to go there through other musicians that just get me to do recordings for them and stuff. So it's beautiful place, man. You know, I'm so happy it's still there.
So what were some let's backtrack. I need to hear the story before we go to some of the other bands that you did after LDK. What became of LDK? I mean, I know about Andy's passing, but what how did you guys deal with that? What happened to the band exactly?
Well, from what I remember, it was really hard. That was the first time I had lost a close friend, you know, and so my mind was like at that time was really messed up. But we tried to push forward, you know. We got our friend Ben Rosenquist to play drums, and we got, you know, Brian Stewart was a big part of like pushing it to get, you know, not stop, and he ended up singing, you know, taking Andy's spot there. And you know, we did some shows and stuff, and it went pretty good. But you know, you know, I love Brian to death, and it was just some band issues, you know, and so we ended up moving, me and Mike and Craig. Ben moved away, I think, and me, Mike, and Craig ended up moving to Salisbury, Maryland, and we got this guy, Wade Jennings, from the band called Abracadabras, to sing for us. He was kind of like, the way he sang was kind of like John Joseph from the Cro-Mags, you know, and that's what Craig loved. He loved that power hardcore, you know, and so we went with this guy, we moved in with him, and, you know, we started trying to do some, we did a couple shows with him, and, you know, we ended up moving back to Virginia, and he lived in Ocean City, so it was really hard to work with him.
So was the band still called LDK?
Yeah, it was still called LD Kid. And, so at that point, you know, I had moved into the city. I was about to move into D.C. from Reston. And we got my friend Grant, like I was telling you, he played the drums in HR with me. But we got him to play drums for a little bit, and that was kind of where it just fell apart. We couldn't get a singer that could match Andy, you know, do anything like Andy could, you know. And it just kind of fell apart, and, you know, we all went our own ways. And, you know, I can fast forward to what we've done. But we can get into that after, you know, we talk about whatever. You know, me and Craig have done a lot of stuff over the years together, you know.
Before that, let me just ask you, do you know who came up with the name LD Kid?
I I've heard a couple different stories. But the story I go with is the name was born because the kids that were in the band all had LD classes together. So I'm not sure who thought of that, whether it was Tim or Andy or Brian Stewart, because he played bass in the band, but or Craig. I'm not sure. So, you know, I'm pretty sure it was like Andy, Craig, or Tim. You know, I don't know, but whoever thought of it's a genius, because that name is just a classic, you know. And I was actually in an LD class, even being a member that joined later. You know, I was in general math, you know. So, you know, it was pretty funny.
Well, so it's interesting, you know, it's interesting the labeling of kids that went on at that time. You know, I wasn't LD, I was actually GT, but I was labeled ED for emotionally disturbed.
Right.
When I was, you know,
back when I was in
third grade, I had to go, you know, to special school and take the short bus and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And still, you know, those letters, like that label, that initial, still, you know, bothers me. I wasn't able to, I've tried to, you know, somewhat turned it into a badge of pride for myself, but it's hard, you know, it's something that you wear.
And thank God the kids that were in the band, you know, the guys that were in the band, I think they've all moved past it as, you know, at that time too. We were all like, screw that shit. Maybe that's why we named the band that, but you know, yeah, it is a tough label to break these days, man, because I have kids that were in special classes right now, you know, my daughter, my stepdaughter, you know, and they had a hard time getting through it and still getting through it, you know. I mean, they're older now, you know, they're beyond it, but, you know, it was a rough time then. You know, they felt like they were not as good as the other kids because they have a problem, you know. And it's so sad to see kids labeled these days with just learning disabilities because they can beat them, you know. They just need the help.
Well, yeah, it seems like all you really needed was music. You know, it was that guitar lab class that inspired you, you know, and sort of led to this career for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you're totally head on with that one, man. If it wasn't for Guitar Lab, Miss Lunsford, and the few good friends that I made in there, like Corbett, you know, some brothers, you know, just a lot of people I met in there. I can't even remember their names now. I'm getting old. But it's great that we were able to vent back then and be able to do things like that. Like, I don't think they have Guitar Lab at South Lakes anymore. You know, it's kind of sad.
Yeah, it's the worst. Like, that's the worst. Because there are a lot of people that I've interviewed that it was music classes in middle school and in high school that, you know, that made them want to go to school. They kept them interested in school, and it was the highlight of their day.
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally, man. Without that class, I think I would have moved here and done something completely different with my life than what I did. And I'm pretty proud to say I feel I chose the right direction, you know, with what I'm doing. You know, not a day goes by I don't get up, you know, go to work, come home, and for at least a few minutes play my guitar, you know, and just to get that out, you know, and that's what that taught me is it's okay to do that, you know. It's okay to play your guitar if that's what your passion is, you know.
Right. So instead of that, you know, that negative label that they tried to slap on a bunch of kids, you know, you guys turned it around and made, like, being an LD kid cool for probably a whole generation of Northern Virginia kids.
Yeah, yeah, myself especially, man. You know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, and you don't have to be a good person and be a good musician. And, you know, you if you want to do it, you're going to do it. You know, if you don't want to do it, you're just going to let it sit there and get the best of you, you know. And that's what those names do. They make some kids just let it get the best of them, you know, and it's sad.
Yeah. Well, it's great what you guys did with that. I want to say I've always thought that about that name. Like, not only is it like a cool punk rock name and it just sounds cool, but it really meant something.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. And, it has its own true meaning here in Reston, you know. Anybody who was a part of it and knew Andy, you know, they know what that meant, you know. He fired a lot of people and kept people, made people keep their dreams going, you know. He was special, man. That the whole kids thing, you know, kids, man. That song is incredible.
Yeah, well, it's amazing what those Reston kids did.
Yeah, all
of
them.
Those Reston kids sure accomplished a lot during that time.
You know, I was fortunate enough to be a bass player and be able to jam with as many, at my age now, maybe a few years ago, in the past, since the kids thing, I've been fortunate enough to jam with a lot of Reston friends, you know. I'll name a few, you know, Brian Stewart, Ben Blanton, Tom Moshke, who else? David Stone. You know, he did some HR stuff with me. We had to take him out. We didn't have a guitar player. He came out and nailed the stuff, you know. And he has a lot of good bands that he plays in. Who else? Jason Browning, you know, he did the HR stuff with me. And he's the one who actually got me the gig with the COC Blind Guys. You know, got me down to Raleigh, and I've been doing that off and on for the past 10 years, you know. And it's just nice that these guys keep playing. You know, they want to play music, you know. Craig Harmison and Munoz, we just did I wish we would have had a drummer that was in LDK because, you know, none of those guys want to use the name because Andy's not there anymore, you know, and I completely understand that. But the quality of music that Craig and Munoz wrote together on this new thing we did, it was the same power and the same, but it's modern. You know, it's metal. You know, it's really, really, really good, you know. You should check it out. It's called Wrong House. You can get it on Spotify or iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great, great album. There's 8 songs. I have a friend, Spiros Pagonis, playing drums on it. His buddy, Johnny Blanton's. We call him Johnny Three Legs. He's singing on it. Yeah, he's singing on it. And it's classic Munoz and Craig, you know, beautiful guitar work, man. So, you know, definitely check it out because it kind of kept the LDK thing going for me. You know, I got to do this with him in 2015. We worked on it for like 2.5-3 years and put out a full-length album, you know.
Let me ask you. I've been talking to people and asking sort of everybody that I interview, you know, it's 30 years since Jam for Man. And right. We've been talking about trying to put together an anniversary show. You know, I've even contacted the Wrestling Community Center about it. So, and they're receptive to it. So, I'm just wondering, if it got put together, I don't know about the rest of the guys or anything, but if everybody else wanted to play, it doesn't have to be called LDK or anything like that, but would you want to play it?
Yeah. I mean, if, you know, like I said, if those guys wanted to get it together, I mean, me and Mike are good friends. Me and Craig are friends. You know, I'm not sure if they would want to play a show, but it would be classic if they did. You know, I would be right there, you know. So, I could throw the word, you know, that might be in the works, you know.
Well, we're trying. I'm trying to feel people out to find out who's interested.
Yeah. And, you know, the band I have right now, Pitbull 1999, I'm sure I could get our drummer because he's wrestling. Derek Decker, he used to be in Branch Manager and a lot of other bands, you know, from Rustin and stuff. He's one of the classic drummers of Rustin, you know, my age, you know, just full on play anything, you know. So he had to move to Charlottesville, but, you know, a band like Pitbull is Rustin, you know, it's all Rustin people. So, you know, it would be something open up or something, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be the same names of the bands, or, you know, they can play.
Right.
People can play covers of those songs, or, you know.
Well, you know what a classic band would be, man. You know, the band I have with Brian Stewart called BSR. Did he tell you about that one?
Yeah. I've heard about BSR, and I've heard some BSR. I've heard, I've watched the video of BSR at the Black Cat.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I posted that. But it was basically a cover band of Rustin bands. And I think we did like 8 cover songs, and then we did our own EP, you know, 7-inch. So I think we did 5 or 6 songs on that.
I said it the other night at practice, and I'm saying it now. This is my opinion. This is the epitome of Wrestling Hardcore. This song, it started in 1987. It's still going on right now. Enjoy yourselves. This is our last one. This is Stand Together.
Tribute to Wrestling, I mean, that would probably be a good band to play on that, you know, if Brian would do it with me.
I can't speak for Brian, but I know that he wants to play the show in some shape or form. He's in.
Oh, he's definitely in. This is I love that Brian is that he's
it would be hard to do without Brian, since like
Preston so much, he would be devastated if he wasn't involved. But yeah, that would be great. That would be a great thing for us around here. You know, some of the old heads that are still here just living, you know, to go relive something that we did 30 years ago, you know, with the same people, you know. That would be awesome. That'd be fucking awesome.
So was BSR the first, I mean, there must have been lots of bands in between LDK and BSR.
For me?
For you, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. BSR was actually back in, when did I get divorced?
Yeah, that wasn't too long ago, right?
That was 2012, 2011, 13 maybe. You know, yeah, that wasn't too long ago. No, I did multiple things after LDK. I did, let me see, man. I played with HR from the Bad Brains, did an album with him. That was great because I was talking to you about my friend Dave Byers that passed away in D.C. He actually pretty much prepped me to be ready to go play with an artist like HR, you know. So a friend of mine, Grant, calls me up, who was the last drummer LDK ever had. He called me up and said, are you ready to do this? And I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, I got HR to sign a 7-year deal with me. I want you to play bass. I was like, I'm on it. You know, the singer of the Bad Brains, who's going to refuse that? You know, so, you know, I've jumped on it. And we went out and did some songs, you know, some reggae tunes, a little metal, some funk, you know, with HR singing. He was being crazy HR, you know. It turned out pretty good. And did a lot of touring for him, you know, just going around the country and, you know, playing reggae, you know.
Play! All right. It's soul reggae, hip hop, rubber dub, move on time. Now everybody have fun.
Here we go. It's a soul reggae, hip hop, rubber dub, move on. Hip-hop, rubber-dub-dub, groove on. MC Soul Reggae, hip-hop, rubber-dub-dub, groove on, groove on. MC Soul Reggae, hip-hop, rubber-dub-dub.
Shows in multiple famous venues like the Boom Boom Room in San Francisco, Johnny Lee Hooker's Club, you know. Just great times with them, man. For like 8 or 9 years, I went around the country doing that. And during that time, we played in Raleigh, North Carolina, and Jason Browning was playing guitar. So he was actually working with Reed Mullen from Corrosion of Conformity and Mike Dean from Corrosion of Conformity on a band called Righteous Fool. And he had actually asked me, you know, they wanted to do the blind thing, but Mike Dean, I'm not sure what his reasons were, but he wasn't going to do it. So, and he's not the bass player on the album. It's Phil Swisher was the bass player on the album. I think he's like AWOL. No one knew where he was. So Jason asked me to come up and do it because he was going to do guitar. So over the years, me and Jason have thrown work to each other. You know, like I've recorded with his band Even Out and played some shows, and he's done some stuff with me and Craig, and you know, he did the HR thing with me for a while. He did the album, actually. He's on the album with us. So I went down to Raleigh, you know, and I had to, like, kind of put HR on hold a little bit So I asked Dave Stone if he would learn the bass lines for the HR stuff that I wrote and these other songs, Bad Brain songs that we played. And Dave came up like a champ and learned all the stuff and covered me to go be able to do the COC thing. And so I've been doing that with them for like 10 years. Because the real band, Corrosion of Deformity, is a four-piece with Pepper and Woody and Mike Dean and Reed. So they just released a new album, and they've been touring, you know, nonstop with that thing, you know. So we haven't done the blind stuff in a few years. But, yeah, it's been, you know, up and down. And then in between that, I've just done, like, my own little projects. And like I said, Pitbull, the band I have with Nathan Turney, is always going, you know. So if I'm gone for a little bit, he can wait. You know, he waits. And I come back and we get busy again, you know. So there's always that thing I can lean on there, you know. And he's been awesome to me for waiting for me, you know.
And then after that how did then BSR come together?
BSR came together. I can't really remember. It was I was living with this was before I was living with him. I was going through a divorce, but we had started this thing maybe a year before I got divorced. And it was just a conversation Brian Stewart and I had that he had been trying to do for a while and talking to these other guys about it. And he brought it up to me, and I was like, yeah, I'll come do it, dude. I know pretty much a third of the set list because I used to play those songs in LDK, you know. So I had to learn, like, Avail songs and Doubt songs and some other songs that we did. And, it just came together real quick. You know, we did it for a few years. How long did we do it? About 3 or 4 years, I think. Maybe 2. I don't know. I have to look at the calendar, man. Like I said, I'm getting old, man. So all these memories are, like, blurring up in my head now.
What was the lineup of BSR?
The lineup was Brian Stewart on vocals. I played bass. Tom Mockey played rhythm guitar. Dave Stone played rhythm lead guitar. And Ben Blanton, Ben Bang, he played drums.
That's a pretty awesome group.
Yeah, it's a good lineup, man. You know,
that is almost like a Rest in All Stars.
That's what we kind of thought of it as. You know, it's kind of funny. But it was a good time, man. You know, and we do these little shows at, like, Fat Tuesdays, you know. Black Cat, you know, and it was just a good time doing the punk rock stuff again like we were when we were kids, you know.
I like how the name is almost even a tribute. Just like the LDK name, it's almost like the,
it is. It actually is. It's a basic skills review. That's a class at South Lakes.
Right. So it was like if you were labeled LDK, then, you know, you took...
You're okay to be...
Right. You would then take a basic skills review class, or maybe it was like basic skills review was the name they gave after they stopped using learning disabled. I don't know.
It might be. You never know. I might have to ask my daughter. She graduated from South Lake, so I might have to ask her.
So it's almost like a tribute to that name at the same time, too, which is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what it was. Brian wanted to do a tribute to Andy and Reston, you know, the Reston hardcore scene. And that's basically why we picked a set list of everybody's songs that we used to. We couldn't do any Transdonians, man. That shit was too hairy. But you know what I'm saying? We picked a set list of good songs from all those bands, and we did it. You know, it was a good time. And recording that 7-inch is now made it set in stone. You know, we were once a band, and we did a tribute for Reston, and you know, it's there. You know,
Well, maybe we can resurrect you guys for another show.
You know, I'm ready to play any day, anytime, anywhere with any band. You know, I'm actually. You know, doing the Pitbull thing, but I'm actually trying to write my own little EP, some metal songs that I've been stored away for years. You know, just trying to get them out and
finally a Jerry solo album.
Kinda, not really a solo album. I'm gonna make a name for it, you know, but and I'm gonna get a bunch of different musicians to play on it. But I have some songs written, you know, that. I have to show them, but you know, I don't want it to be Jerry Barrett or anything like that, you know, solo album. But it would be fun to do something like that, you know, get like an all-star album like DSR, you know, get a bunch of my friends to help me rewrite my songs and get them to where they're good enough to play, you know.
Well, you've never done a whole album of just your songs, have you?
No. Basically, what I've done, man, all my life is play with people who have songs or join a band and help write songs. You know, I'm really, really a learner. You know, I can sit down and you give me a song, I can learn it. You know, and I play a lot of guitar and stuff, but I've never really had people who can play my stuff or that want to play my stuff. You know, so. You know, it either sucks or, you know, it's just not what they're into or whatever, you know. But I'm actually picking these songs that I've had for like 10 or 15 years and trying to get some people to help me rewrite them, you know. I think it'll come out nice, you know. Throwing some stuff together.
I think so, too. I'd be really excited to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. My wife's been really supportive of it. She helped me get the studio and... I got a little, you know, portable home studio set up here and all the knickknacks I need to really do it. You know, I just got to get busy on it and get the right people in here to help me, you know. So and I don't think that would be too hard, you know, if I really concentrate on it.
No, but, you know, it sounds like with all the musicians that you've played with and the scenes that you've been involved with, you know, you have your Reston scene, your Maryland scene, your North Carolina scene, your DC guys,
yeah.
You know, it sounds like you know pretty much a whole shit ton of musicians over the years, and they probably owe you some favors too, and we'll probably be really excited to play on it. Well, don't let me say it like that.
Oh man, that's awesome. Yeah, you know the guys that I've had the opportunity to play with down in Raleigh are just phenomenal, man. You know, Carl Gell, he's become like my father figure. You know, he's such a great person. And Scott Little's become, you know, Carl and Scott are in a band called King Hitter. And they're doing really well, man. They used to have a band called Leadfoot. And, you know, it was after COC, after Carl left Corrosion Conformity, they did Leadfoot. So, you know, they still do a lot of those songs and tour and stuff. And whenever we do the Corrosion Conformity Blind, you know, it's Carl and Scott. They play on it with me and Michael Brown. A couple of different guitar players do that spot, T.R. Gwen and Jason Browning. You know, he actually did that with us, too. But, yeah, they're great, a great bunch of people, you know. And Reed, actually, Mullen was my best man on the Motorhead cruise on my wedding. So, you know, I know I could ask him for a favor.
Yeah, probably. You'd think.
He's just real busy right now. He's touring and stuff, you know. Had some knee issues, you know, had to have some knee surgery, and, you know, he's doing a lot better from what I understand, so he's going back out with them. He might be back out with them right now. You know, they were supposed to go sometime in July, so they're back out promoting their new album. But, yeah, it's been great, man. I'm sure I could get some people around to help me out, you know.
So it sounds like moving from Seattle to Reston might have been the best thing that ever happened to you.
You know, I was so mad at my parents when they did that. I was very mad because I had a band, you know, and I was very into it. And, yeah, I can say now that I can't praise them anymore for doing it, you know. It just, they gave me the direction to go, and they put me in the right area at that time in the 80s, you know, to where bands were playing everywhere, you know, hair bands and, you know, metal bands and you name it, a band was playing somewhere so every night, you know, so I was able, you know, and I had my big brother who was into it too, and he would take me everywhere I wanted to go, and I would go wherever he wanted to go, and we both kind of just formed ourselves into it, you know. So yeah, my parents were awesome for getting me out here during that time, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like Northern Virginia was pretty influential on the both of you in terms of music.
Yeah, it was. You know, my brother did the stuff with me in LDK. He kind of managed us for a little while, but there was some stuff went on, and he ended up going home back to Seattle because my parents had moved back, so I ended up being here by myself. But he ended up going back and pursuing the tech career, you know, and became phenomenal at it. You know, he's doing well, but, yeah, that made us both very influential, you know, going around and seeing bands like Crocus and, you know, Corrupt and Rat Child America and Scarecrow and all them bands around here, you know, back in the 80s and then in the 90s, the punk rock scene, you know, the metal punk rock scene, you know, like Madball and Cro-Mags and stuff that was going on was great, you know, late 80s, early 90s. It was just a good metal scene for me and my brother to get out, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And you were a part of some really cool things too.
Yeah, you know, I actually got to play one of the last shows at the brewery in Raleigh, which is like one of the most classic punk rock places during the mid 80s for all the punk rock bands to go in Raleigh, you know, like dedicated, everybody's played there. And I was very fortunate enough. I've seen it in movies and, you know, interviews or people talked about the place, you know, but I actually got to play there, and then they shut it down right after we played a couple months later, and they closed it. So very fortunate enough to play that place, you know, where all my favorite punk rock bands have played.
Well, so it sounds like music has been pretty good to you, Jerry.
Yeah.
And you've been pretty good to music back.
Yeah, it's my life, man. And you know, like I said, I'm blessed to have a family that knows it, and they're behind me 100%, man. You know, and we keep doing it till the day they lay me to rest.
Well, I hope that's a long, long, long time from now.
Me too.
I imagine there's a lot of music to be made before then.
Yeah, there definitely is, man. There definitely is. If I can put my little bit of touch to it or flavor to it or even write it, then, yeah, there's definitely a lot to come, man. You know, I'm ready.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you you being on the podcast and telling your story. It really,
hey, man,
you know, the LDK was a big piece of the scene at that time, and you know the story had really yet to be told. So thanks for telling your part of that.
Man, it's a part of my life I'll never forget, and I'm just so happy that you're putting it together and, you know, getting everybody's story together and, you know, letting everybody hear their and share their memories and stuff, man. I really appreciate it, man. And thanks for getting a hold of me, man. And we'll talk soon.